You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
Welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 301st edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 959th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of July 27, 2023. I'm your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Smart takes the shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
This week's banner moment happened on Tuesday when Anthony Walker arrived on campus. His arrival means that the 2023-24 squad is together for the first time. Of course, there's always a chance for a late addition to the team with an extra scholarship that is available. However, having the team together allows the coaching staff to start evaluating the team as a whole, figuring out what every player can do, who plays well in what positions, and what aspects of team play need to be addressed the most. Anthony's arrival also signals that we are getting closer to the start of the school year and practice. Yes, I said practice, beginning in earnest. Summer work is so vital for individual and team growth. So the squad is present. Let's get to work on meshing this team together to maximize all this talent. Okay, now let me introduce my co-host for this week. Jared is off this week. His daughter is celebrating the 7th birthday. Ryan is somewhere on Twitter fighting with Jay Horry over the U.S. Women's National Soccer team. And Andy is... He was going to get here, but a soccer match for one of his daughters lasted a little bit long, and he will not be able to be here. But we do have a special guest from our community who has coached youth basketball for 24 years in the Columbus, Indiana area, most recently in the Columbus Revolution program and at Parkside Elementary. It's Bob Motes. Coach Motes, how are you this evening, and what is on your mind about Indiana basketball?
I am great. I'm wearing the shirt here because earlier in the day there was a conversation in some place that I had with Jared, and I mentioned something in a bunch of us, and I said something to the effect of, if this team is not a tournament team, I am the doppelganger of Tom Selleck from the 80s. And he asked me to put on a Saturday shirt, which I have several, and I've decided in honor of that request to wear the IU Saturday shirt. It's got all sorts of fun stuff on it. The five banners are here, and just thought, and that it's also indicative of the fact that this is the last show in July. It's almost August. We go back to school in 7 days. A lot of other districts are back through high school. The kids will be back on the college campuses en masse in about 2-3 weeks. And that just means basketball's right around the corner, like you were saying. We're ready to go. I'm ready to start hearing some balls, some balls hitting hardwood and in unison.
Absolutely. And in order to do that, you need Big Ten Media Day for football, which was held the last 2 days. So yep. The gridiron is just around the corner in a couple of weeks, which then leads to basketball. So we hope that the Indiana Hoosiers and all of their transfer portal additions will find a way to get that magical 6 wins. Tom Allen spoke earlier today. Mm-hmm. And that means, again, it's getting closer. And in these summer sessions, we hope to bring you enough information to keep you informed and just give you a little bit of taste of what's going to happen. And Bob and I have an interesting segment, too, where we're going to go through the roster and try to give you some points that aren't as obvious about the players and the team going forward, and we hope you enjoy that. But here's what we have in store this week. We have a very few Hoosier headlines, but we'll go over them in segment one. And then in segment two, as I said, player-by-player strengths and weaknesses. We'll talk team offense and defense as well. And then we have four good questions from our community in segment three in the mailbag. All of that is coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. And now let's talk about our presenting sponsor.
Home Field Apparel, where warm for the team.
This edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison and so many more. The bottom line is that Home Field has something for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable, the colors will last through many washings, plus you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through the Kelley School of Business. What could be better than that? They come out with some new IU stuff. They're coming out with new schools, refreshing the schools they've already had. Mystery box sweatshirts, if you're into that, you know, the discounted price, and they'll send you something that you don't even know is coming. They do it well at Homefield. So go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME for 15% off your entire first order. So if you haven't used it yet, that's HOME. Promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, here are some Hoosier headlines. And as Bob said, we don't have a whole lot of what's going on. But Anthony Walker did make it to campus. He had to finish up some academics. He is here. He came Tuesday and is starting to play. I'm going to totally mispronounce this recruit's name, and that's really bad of me, but I think it's Anor Boding. If that's wrong, I will correct that. But he put IU in its top eight. So, again, Indiana is making a lot of these lists. I think that's a good sign. Caleb Banks spoke with the media this week for a few minutes. And then former IU player and coach Mike Roberts was hired as an assistant at North Carolina State. He was at Cincinnati for a couple years after leaving Indiana when Mike Woodson was hired. So congratulations to Coach Mike Roberts. Always loved watching him coach and yell on the bench. I wish him nothing but the best. Bob, anything stand out to you of those headlines or anything else that you have heard that we want to share with our listeners this evening?
Just know the guys are practicing and working their tails off on a day-to-day basis. And again, I was going to echo how glad I am for Mike Roberts going to North Carolina State, and you know, just getting that bump up to the Power Five and back into high majors for him to hopefully continue his coaching career as it progresses.
Yeah, I think he wanted to stay, and I think Coach Woodson wanted him to stay, but at that time there was not a spot for him. Mm-mm. And he had worked with Wes Miller, who was the head coach then at Cincinnati, and so he had an opportunity to get back as an assistant coach with active coaching. Now, since then, I think they've added assistant coaches who can work with the team and coach, maybe not travel. So there's been some changes in the NCAA rules on what assistant coaches can do. That allowed North Carolina State and Coach Keats to offer the job to Mike Roberts. But we like seeing that, like you said, go to Power Five. Caleb Banks spoke to the media. And again, these are short, brief moments, said all the right things. Interesting on how he is looking forward as a sophomore. And with you have a lot of newcomers of trying to teach how things are done, and he's looking forward to doing that. We'll talk a little bit more about Caleb. He brought up some of the things that I think we're going to bring up of what he can bring to the program. So that was good as well. Anything else on your mind here for Hoosier headlines, Bob?
No, I just think again we're at a time of the year where it's going to be a little slow. But the other thing I would like to add is just seeing all the official visits coming up in the next month, that we're going to be getting a lot of word out of Bloomington and wherever you find that information as those visits are going and what the kids are saying before, during, and after. It's going to be an interesting time, and a lot of groundwork has already been laid, and a lot of that first level stuff, second level stuff. We're getting closer and closer to some kids in that 2024 class, especially saying, okay, I'm ready to make a decision. And coach, I'm coming here, I'm going there.
I will point out that, go to our friends at Inside the Hall. They're doing some non-conference previews. If you haven't been there already to see what some of the teams on Indiana's non-conference schedule, and the women's non-conference schedule is also starting to take place. I think there's as many as 7 games that have been announced for our Lady Hoosiers as they get ready to advance their program, which is on fire. So, okay, coming up on Assembly Call Radio. We're going to discuss some player evaluations from a couple guys who haven't seen him work this summer, which is always good. But we have our opinions nonetheless, so stick with us here on the Assembly Call. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in late July on a real slow news week. But hopefully Bob and I will interest you in some player evaluations coming up. So we're glad that you're here. In my new renovated Indiana-themed man cave, I got the IU basketball shorts over here outside of camera view. You can see the football jerseys in the back. Probably should get them under glass at some point, but that's too expensive for this teacher right now to do. But we're renovating three floors, flooring and painting, and we're doing the painting ourselves. And so that's a little bit of news, but it feels really good down here. Changed it up a little bit. So that's exciting news on my behalf. And as you said, school starts for you very soon. It's August 7th for me, so I have another week off before we have to be in for teacher days, and students on August 9th. And I like what I do, but it's closer to basketball season, so we got that going for us. So, all right, let's get into our discussion of the roster. Here we go.
Hi, this is James Blackman Jr. I never miss an open three, and I never miss an episode of the Assembly Call. Join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers!
Welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsone. I'm here with Coach Bob Motes, and we're getting ready to go right down the roster. And we're just going to talk about things that we like and things maybe the players might need to be concerned about, or what's some room for improvement from our eyes from afar. As we said, we're not in practice, but we want to stay away from some of the obvious things that have been said over and over here in the offseason, and maybe give you a couple things to think about for the roster and a couple things to watch as we start laying our eyes mid-October, early November on this Indiana basketball team. So let's start right now, Bob, with Xavier Johnson. You can go with the non-obvious positive or something you think you would be concerned about coaching Xavier Johnson going forward.
It's incredible. Maybe it is obvious, but yeah, I think the most obvious thing about it is you get a guy who's played 6 years of high major college. You know, this will be his 6th year of high major college basketball, leading your team of freshmen and sophomores, basically, with, you know, Galloway, different ball game. But, you know, you're talking, you got a bunch of freshmen and sophomores, and you've got, you know, the steady veteran, or you get the veteran at the helm. And I think, you know, his year last year, sitting next to the coaches, sitting on the bench, allowed him to see the game from a different perspective, a perspective he's never seen before, because he's always been out on the court. The thing I always found interesting about XJ, that first year and even a little bit in the second one, the thing that his ability to see, I would say, the whole floor. I think he makes incredible reads on level one, which is ball handler moves going. I think he does incredibly well with level two moves of what to do with that person who's rolling. My question is, without Trace Jackson Davis feeding in there, knowing that Ware will renew both in particular, even Mbako a little bit, Sparks at times, all those guys are going to have some moments, you know, are going to be really good, It's going to be different than Trace Jackson Davis. Is he going to be able to see the level three actions? Is he going to be able to see those, the other players on the court? And then when the tag rotates over, hitting that player like Trey Galloway or CJ Gunn out on the perimeter, looking for the off big that's not the screener, you know, in the dunker spot. Will he, you know, is he going to be better at that element of the game? And it's really for him, this is the best team he's ever played on. Bar none. When you think of those 3 years at Pitt, even the first 2 years at Indiana, you know, position, you know, 1 through 5 went on the floor. This is going to be the most talented team he's played on. The question is, how's he going to respond to that?
You know, you match up with what I would work really hard on him is being that facilitator. And you put it in the 1, 2, and 3, but if he embraces the facilitator role over a scoring role, he's going to get his points because he's going to come off and score at the rim. He's going to get some kick out threes. I'm comfortable with his scoring output. But when X, if we can remember when X was really good, was that end of that first year he was a Hoosier and he was getting 7, 8, 9 assists. Now, he only did that for like 5 or 6 games, I think, or there was a stretch of play at the very back end, is the back third of the season, and including the Big Ten tournament when Indiana went on the roll to the semifinal and really made the tournament with that. So that was my thing, too, that I would work on him, is seeing that floor as a facilitator. And you mentioned, you know, watching from the bench. I know Coach Woodson trusts his point guard sometimes to call stuff, now he has a better handle on that, I would imagine. But that's something I think you need to work on. The thing I'm going to bring up that I really like that I don't know is obvious, I think he's a pretty good defensive rebounder from the point guard position. Mm-hmm. And Indiana struggled, in my opinion, rebounding the basketball. And tonight and throughout the start of the season, it's going to be, you know, I'm going to beat that in over and over and over again about how Indiana is going to be better rebounding team, and that's going to help their defense, and that's going to help their transition offense, which we're going to talk a little bit about too. I think something that sometimes we get caught up in the pick and roll and the points and the 3 points and his defensive pressure, but I think X is a pretty solid rebounder and will help overall rebounding. Let's move on to Trey Galloway. Your thoughts about Trey, what strengths would you really bring up, and what's something that you would work with or be somewhat concerned about with Trey's play?
I think Trey's a great example of a secondary driver, and I think that, you know, and you look at him both, you know, on the offensive end of the floor, while XJ and Ware might be doing one thing, you may have Trey on that other side with Mbako or Renew ready to set up, and, you know, can run some sort of ball screen action, whether it's, you know, you have a strong side shooter in the corner or you have whatever. His ability to get to the lane and facilitate from there is to me just a huge asset to the program. I think the other thing defensively, this is your kid that gets on the floor. This is your kid that, you know, will dive into the other team's bench for a ball. This is your kid that will, you know, he's going to win the floor burns and practice award if you have those. You know, that's where Trey Galloway, you know, jumps out at you. That, and also, and again, just really kind of understands the, you know, how the offense is supposed to flow, how the game's supposed to flow. What I'd love to see him be is just a touch more selfish. Just a touch more selfish. And it drives us crazy when kids are too selfish, but it actually drives us, I think, crazier when a kid isn't, you know, is like, I don't want to shoot it. Or it's like, there's a point where, man, it's your time. And if he can get his time, and again, I'm thinking Trey's probably a 20-minute a game player. I look at that as kind of, that's where I'm seeing it. It's like, if he goes to 24 or 28, I'm not too sure where we are as a program at that moment. There will be times where he will hit that, but I really see him kind of being, you know, in early game situations, even if he's a starter, certain situations, in that second half. But I really do think that, you know, if he can just maybe, again, look for his shot a little more and be stronger with it. I'd like to see, you know, things like the floater would like to go away. I'd like to see more jump stop and, you know, step through type moves, that sort of thing. But that, and I think on the defensive end, just being a little more disciplined with his hands. That's the one thing I see with Trey. It's just, it's good to be active, but it can be a thing of being a little too active with your hands.
He's that glue guy. You know, he does everything, you know, at full speed. Yes, I think, you know, what he does well defensively is he gets to people on the catch. They assign him. I want to think about the Purdue games. And when those guards caught the basketball, Galloway was there with his hand in the way, maybe a little too handsy, like you said. But he was there, which pushed those guards out 3-4 more feet, which disrupted the flow of the Purdue offense in both games. I think he's really good at avoiding screens and sprinting to the catch for the perimeter. Mm-hmm. Defensively, where I'd like to have him get better is in that nail slot rim stuff that Woodson plays. He sometimes overcommits or stays too long in the help, and he's got to learn to play a little bit of that game and get out and close out on the threes, which I think everyone needs to adapt to Coach Woodson's philosophy there, which you're in massive help, and so your job is to stay and then get out. And I think a lot of players, what I've read about that defense is that it is just so hard to not stay because that driver is coming to anticipate when that – and you brought it up too. He gets out of control a little bit on his run and jump passing. I'd love to see him have those playoff 2 feet, a two-foot game added to that. I know he scores a lot off the off-balance layups. That's good when he goes up. He looks a little awkward because he goes off the wrong foot and he lays it up or does a reverse. That's some talent there. But I think adding to that game is that ability with that speed to bust in the lane, go off 2 feet. We call it Villanova pivots and pivot back out and find a shooter on a European cut or a kick back from where he came from. Add that to this game as opposed to only being able to fly in and either reverse layup or throw the ball to the opposite wing as he's jumping that baseline drift.
Just a moment on that moment of that nail slot rim construct. And I think it's true anytime you're in a help situation. And I also think it's important when we start talking about like tagging, I thought that that nail position is like, it was almost like you're reversing the tag that instead of tagging the screener, you're actually tagging the ball handler. And I think in so many situations, and I think they got better at this as the season progressed, but it's that whole thing where when you have that guy on the nail, you know, the ball's going to get stopped. You have help behind you. Your job is to basically force that position more east-west than north-south, or maybe southeast or northwest versus, you know, that's, you're trying to just kind of get, you're buying your guy time to get through the screen. And I think if Trey can kind of, I think you're right. If he can figure that part out and then that quick close out to that slot wing position, when the, you know, when the ball handler gives it up, that's going to be critical. And I think we're going to talk about that. And that's going to be a key thing, what we're talking about a little later, but it's really where Trey is at this point in time, where it's like, just not, you know, you don't have to do it all, man. You don't have to do it all.
So a newcomer probably into the starting lineup. We haven't seen a lot other than highlight tapes, and highlight tapes are always going to show the good things, and that's Mackenzie Mbako. So I'm just going to throw this out. Obviously, he can score. What I'm interested in seeing from him is he, you know, I think he can get there on the drive. I think he can post. I think he can shoot. How efficiently he can get there at the college game is really going to matter a lot to Indiana. But he is good at all of those things. My area that I want to see him be good at as quickly as possible is picking up Coach Woodson's defensive stuff. I think for every superstar that comes in, whether you're ranked in the top 10, positioning off the ball is one of the toughest things to pick up, because when you're scoring 20, 30 points a game, you know, wherever you're playing, you're probably not being asked to be a defensive stopper. And then when you come to college, you're going to have to play. So that positioning, and then along with that is, if we are playing him at the three, can he guard that three? I assume if Indiana chooses to play him there, they believe that and his athleticism. But those are things, you know, that I think I would be working with him right away on. The other thing is just score. Come on, dude. Just we need you to be that guy to score at all different levels. Your thoughts on Mbako from what little we know?
I'll jump offensive and then go defensively. I think he hit the main point, you know, the big point with him, which is, okay, kid, welcome to the big leagues now. You know, you're going to level up now. You know, you've been playing against kids your age or maybe a year older. Now you're playing against all, you know, you're playing against men now, and it's going to be a different feel. The big thing for him offensively for me is, can, you know, I know he can drive. I know he can dive. I know he can cut. I know he can do a lot of, I know he's not just a, he's not a 6'9" 3-point shooter. I know that. What I don't know at this point is how good is he going to be at when the defense attracts to him? Can he make a play to get it to somebody else? Can he, and especially at college game speed, and how fast right now, probably not, but how fast is it going to take for him to pick up on that to be able to make more of those types of plays when help side gets engaged, whether it's a bounce pass to the dunker spot or a kick out to an open shooter, that's going to be essential for him going through. I think defensively, I'm interested to see how he's going to leverage his length. That I think part of him is going to be where him as a three, first off, the three on the other team's got to guard him too. Right. So it's like, you put Ethan Morton on him, I'm not, okay, post that kid up and just see what happens.
Well, and that's what I said in the community when I showed the Will Furman play, the chin punch or the 45 mm-hmm. cut, right? You could put him in spots where the bigs are on the outside and you can dive him down against a smaller three and take advantage of that. That is a plus when you have an athlete that can score outside or inside and is going to really play that three. You're right.
It's huge. Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, the next part is that defensive portion, which is, okay, he doesn't have to be two steps away from the guy he's guarding with the ball. He can maybe be, he can maybe take a step back and still be effective to challenge a shot because the kid's built like a college, built like some of those team centers, or at least built like a, built like a college four, even at the height of a small school college, small ball college five. So he's got that, some of that physique where, okay, and again, even on the drive, it's like, okay, you can drive on him. And if you're a 6'4" guy and you're trying to go up off 1 foot for a layup, I have a feeling that thing might end up in the bleachers if you're not careful. So I think defensively it's going to be him kind of figuring out his body and how that's going to translate to the college game. But I think a lot of it, coaches, I think you're dead on with the scheme. He's got to figure the scheme out, got to get that quick. And it's like, and that's going to be, I think, a big key for him in those first 2 months is how much does he pick up in those bye games to be able to figure out, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
So then we go to Malik Renew, who had a pretty good freshman year. We've talked about the fouling. Here's the thing I think that he does well. I think he is a basketball player. I think he understands the game. I think the key thing is his passing. I think he could be a really good passer. And that's something that, I don't think a lot about with Malik Renew because he's got his footwork is nice. He's got some up and under moves inside. The obvious thing that we've all talked about is, can he stretch the floor and shoot? But he can be a passer. If he can draw someone out a little bit where you can dive a Mbako, or you can set a what I call a wiper screen, a big to a guard for a three-point shot, can he be an efficient passer from that four? I believe he can. The area that I would really work with him on is being more aware defensively and getting to spots quicker. I think some of the reasons, the obvious foul trouble, was because he was reacting to the speed of the game instead of being aware, anticipating, and not letting the guy flash, or when the guy flashed that he's there at that spot, and then understanding his body. Like, he's going to be strong enough to guard from a little bit of what we call gap or space. He doesn't have to get all in. He was heavy with his chest. He's got to back his chest off, be in a stance, use his length, 6 inches away from somebody. A lot of times freshmen come in, they think playing hard is getting right up in someone, especially in the post, because they've been able to dominate like players. Even at Mount Verd, you play really good players, you're able to body up a lot, but you can't do that in college because your hands come down and all of those things. So better awareness, be alert to the ball, get to the position of the catch before reacting, and then being more in a stance away from the guy and still be able to defend. That would be my area for Renew. Your thoughts on Malik?
Yeah, I was thinking all day passing with Renew. It's like his high, and especially him in a high low game. So love that you hit that. I think the thing for me defensively that I think is I think he's quicker on his feet than he shows. And I remember watching him again, that, you know, the Miller kid from Miami, and the struggles. I think he probably, in the limited possessions that he guarded him, probably handled him the best of any of IU's players, with maybe the exception of Trace Jackson Davis. And I would say that Renew, by that last game of the season, had figured out a little more about on ball. I think the off ball part is where, yeah, that's where some of the struggle is. But I think he's figuring out the speed of the game, and you can now see him being able to guard high level, high ability, high major wings, you know, basically driving fours like Miller was from Miami. I do think the other thing for him offensively, though, what he really needs to work on is his ball handling, especially as he's driving the ball. It's, you know, it's one of those little, he's never really been expected to do that against tough competition. But I think for him, when you see him put the ball on the deck, I'm like, yeah, you know, I think most of us are like, okay, well, let's see where this goes. You know, we need to be able to see that he can, you know, get there a little quicker and a little more efficiently, maybe use more footwork, you know, on a stronger first step, use that size as a big who's handling the ball, and just get tighter with it. And I think going up against Mbako, Walker, in practice every day, Caleb Banks, every day he's going up against these guys, that's going to help him immensely get stronger with the basketball.
And then the final starter, as we kind of presume the starting five, is Kalel Ware. Your thoughts on Kalel? Again, we haven't seen him in an Indiana uniform, highlight tapes and some of the plays at Oregon. What does he do well? That's not obvious, if we can find something. And what's something that we would work on with him if we were coaching him?
He's versatile. I mean, there's so much he can do out of, you know, just especially in transition. You know, I was watching some video from, you know, from when he came in, and just watching when he hit three-point shots, that he would set up behind the three-point line, and just in transition, they would just pop it over to him, and it was so smooth at 23 feet, just letting it fly in transition, stopping at the top of the key. And that it basically can be so effective in transition, opening up your offense. I can't remember a guy at Indiana that had that sort of weapon in their repertoire at this stage of their, really for a long time. I can't think of a big that had that ability just to be able to do that. And if you overplay him there, he can just cut, and you've got him in, you know, you've got him there for an easy look inside. I think the big thing I'm really, I wouldn't say worried, I mean really concerned, I'm really watching for, is how he handles physicality in the Big Ten. Bigs can be really funny, and I come from Columbus, Indiana, so we don't really do bigs. Not since the 60s, you know, and I would say that the big problem is, you know, but when you work with them when they're younger, especially, they're not always your most physical players coming through, and sometimes they don't exactly eat up contact. There's not a whole, you know, it takes them a while to figure out how to bang around a little bit. And when you get in the black and blue division of the Wisconsins, the Michigan States, the Purdues, how is he going to Rutgers especially? You know, you start looking at those programs. How's he going to respond when he's dealing with, you know, taking a lot more action, probably below the chest than he's used to taking? And how's he going to handle kind of hip checks and the sorts of moves that seasoned bigs use, especially in the Big Ten? I think he'll adjust to it. I think he'll do fine with it. I think he'll be great at it. But it's one of those things where I just want to, you know, just one of those things of making sure that's probably the one area where I'm like, let's just see where this goes.
Yeah, I agree. I think he can play the four as well, even though he's huge. You might see more of a Renew scoring down low. So again, I think it'll be interesting for Indiana fans to see his shot form. I think he has nice form. We've had nice players at the five and the four, but they weren't really shooters. And I know that he didn't shoot a high percentage. at Oregon the first year, but they had a lot of bigs, and then he fell out of favor in the second half. So I think we're going to really be happy with how he shoots it. Now, whether he shoots it for a high percentage or not, or uses it, but I think he can go to either shoulder, and he's got a little bit of a Sigma or a turnaround game in the post as well, which is nice. You took the word out of my mouth, Coach, with physicality. And the physicality is going to match up in two ways. One, he didn't end up in a good way at Oregon in a program that demands a little bit of toughness. Coach Woodson's going to demand toughness. I mean, it's just pure. That's what he is. And so the thing to work on is you got to coach him. And you got to find out how he can be coached, right? Can he be coached hard? Or do you try to draw out that toughness through other measures? But the thing to watch there is probably not so much Khalil Ware. It's how does the coaching staff coach this kid who supposedly has, you know, some motor questions. We'll just put it that way to be fair to the young man. Some motor questions. You know, how are you going to coach him to be physical? And physical is not just being a bully and fouling and doing all that, but it's being able to take a bump in this league and score. It's able to, you know, take a drive in a chest or post up, defend, to block out, to rebound. It is a very physical league, and you have to be tough. And so that's going to be the area. I know I got a little bit of inside information that they're really, really been coaching him hard, and not mean hard, but just really staying with him about playing at a high level with a high motor, with a high amount of energy, because then his natural ability will shine. But I'm looking forward to seeing him shoot the basketball. The positive is shoot the basketball in the post. Mid range and three, and hope that he's successful. It's just smooth from what I've seen.
There's so much interchangeability. I just want to say real quick, there's so much interchangeability. I think you hit the nail on the head with this, between what we call the fours and the fives. That you know, Renew may be your low post guy. Ware may be your high pick and pop guy. You know, where some programs that's like the four versus the five. There's so much Villanova type action that you could run with these guys,
right?
It's so fascinating to see where we're going to start.
And how that's going to move. You can have a lineup with Banks at the three and Bako at the four and Renew at the five, or Ware at the five too. So Mbako can take some minutes at that play at that spot too. And, or you could have, you know, Galloway, CJ Gunn can slide down that three. There's a lot of roster potential here, right, where people aren't just going to be a two. They're not just going to be a three. They're not going to be a four. It's going to be a bunch of availability there. But let's go to a couple guys that we hope have real breakout years that were freshmen last year. And when they had their limited time, they had some issues, but they also showed some ability to do some things well. And that's CJ Gunn and Caleb Banks. We'll start, Coach, with you. CJ Gunn, your thoughts.
With CJ, I just think a lot of, you know, just comes down to can he get into the groove of the game, and, you know, trying to figure out coming off the bench, getting in the flow, getting in for, you know, 4 to 8 minutes, and knowing full well that, you know, he may, you know, he's got, you know, be very selective in his shooting. He hustled on defense. I can tell. I know that much. I mean, the guy, you could just tell he was doing everything he could. He's running the floor on offense. He was playing hard. He was playing freshman hard, as we were talking about a minute ago. But I don't know, you know, at this point, it's like really watching him, I really think the big key is we know he's a shooter. We know he can we're pretty sure he can drive it. We know he's a hard-nosed defender. And it's just the real question is, can he handle the ball well enough, I guess, to be a college off guard, to be that secondary lead type guard, to be more that slot sort of player? Can he get a ball screen and do something with it is really the question for CJ Gunn on the offensive end. And conversely, you know, and that's that, I think that that's the big thing with him. I would just add on to this that with him, Caleb Banks is kind of the same thing, because the question is, what do you do with these guys? Are they three, you know, are you talking about wings? Are you talking about off guards or fours? I don't know what they're going to look like, but I know that at this point, you know, if I'm looking at, you know, because I think a lot of the things that I like about CJ, I liked about Caleb last year. I'm just going to add this real quick, and we can kind of just, I kind of see him as a package deal almost.
Right.
Caleb, to me, it's going to be a question of, can he attack a closeout? can he put the ball on the deck? Very similar to CJ. And then defensively, just making sure that he's, you know, off ball doing the things he's supposed to be doing on the help side to really just make this thing, to make this thing work.
CJ, for me, what I like about him is his vertical play. Like, he gets off the ground. He had some monster rebound dunks, I think, a couple of them. He's able to get up, and that goes back to that rebounding that I am just going to talk over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. I think when he plays the two or the three, he can go in and get some rebounds and initiate transition. And if we want to play faster, which I love transition basketball, give me the Lakers and all of that kind of stuff. I just love that style of play. You need rebounding, and you need rebounding and go. And I thought Indiana played better last year when they turned Trayce Jackson-Davis loose with rebound and go and had him initiate off the break. I thought that turned out really well. Well, now if you got four or five guys that can go rebound, we talked about X rebounding, I think CJ can get off the ground. The question about CJ is not necessarily is he going to get better shooter. I trust that he's going to get better. It's where is his shot? Is he a catch and shoot three inside out, or can he come off a screen heel toe or jump into it, whatever his preferred method of shooting? Where are his shots going to come from? What is his best way to catch the basketball on the move or stationary? Mm-hmm. And then how is Coach Woodson going to use him? But I think you'll see more shots go in. He'll get used to the game. I was really pleased with him defensively. He was a little handsy at times, but you know, when you don't play, Bob, but you come in, and I never saw him loaf. And that's hard when you get a minute or 3 minutes. Like, one of the things I think maybe is not obvious and should be obvious to all of us is both Banks and CJ Gunn gave maximum effort, and they didn't seem – they had to be frustrated without playing. Everyone's going to be frustrated without playing, even your most bought-in, you know, reserve. But it never really showed on the court. Those guys at times really did some good things. And so Caleb Banks, I know I'm going to catch grief from this, but deflections. When I think of Caleb Banks, I think of he deflected the ball, dove on the floor, got loose balls, got some offensive rebounds that were, you know, you talk about motor. He just had a nose for the basketball last year. At 6'7", if you're going to play him at the two or the three, I think that's going to be fantastic. And there I go again, going to get loose balls, going to get rebounds. Those things take a team from 22, 23 wins and move them forward if they can, right? I mean, with all other things. I'm not saying just diving on the floor for loose balls is going to win more games this year than what they won last year. But those guys bring that. I think the thing for me with Caleb is he's got to be able to score in contact at the rim. He's got to be able to finish at the rim. He's got to take a hit the shoulders, lean into the chest, and be able to go and score. I thought there were times when he missed a lot of shots at the rim as a freshman. He was trying to avoid contact instead of taking the contact, finishing, and one. He's got to have a physical presence. You talk about physicality. We have a lot of guys who have to be more physical. And again, it's not dirty. That's just being able to take a bump and give a bump. And Caleb is one of those.
We got so much of it. Real quick, just so much of it comes down to you initiating contact.
Right.
Are you the hitter or the hitty? Are you instigating or are you responding? And I think that this is something where especially really good players, and I know we both have coached guys who are really good, they're not always good at being the instigator because they're always so good at avoiding it through using athleticism and skill. And all of a sudden, you don't have that. All of a sudden, all the cars go 230. You're not the only car on the track that goes 230 anymore. 220 is still pretty fast, but you know, now that everybody's 230, you're going to have to race like everybody can go 230. So that's the thing of watching Caleb, watching CJ, being able to, all right, I'm going to hit first, then block out. I'm not going to charge into the guy, but I'm going to definitely make some contact to give myself some space to get my move, to make my play.
All right. So we got four guys. Those are the top eight. We got four guys. Let's run through those real quick. I'll give you Anthony Walker. I'll take Peyton Sparks, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
But fire away on what you know about Anthony Walker.
Walker is, if you talk about a guy that can dive to the bucket and get points that way, that's Walker. You know, Walker is the sort of guy that when he's in there, if he's going to, on the times we're going to see him in there, I think when you see him go in, he's going to be the guy that, you know, his guy leaves him and he just backdoor cuts it. He gets in for the layup or the dunk. Not really sure where he is defensively. I think that he's somebody that I, you know, for his size, he's not going to play post players. He's going to be out on the perimeter guarding more. That would be something to be interesting to see how Mike Woodson utilizes him. I'm just curious to see how much he utilizes him at what, you know, what situations he gets used in this throughout the season.
And then Peyton Sparks, I think his strength is he wants to be an Indiana Hoosier. I mean, he's talented. Mm-hmm. He played at Ball State. He's at Indiana. He's not just a body, but he wanted to be at Indiana. And he's a hard worker. And so when you have to go against that in practice, you better bring your A game in practice when you got someone like Peyton Sparks that is busting it. Like, he's at the rim scorer. And, you know, he's going to be a heavy post defender. He reminds me of the Durr kid we had a couple years ago that would get some minutes on when you had a big center, you know, Edie or whatever else. You got some foul trouble. You're going to be able to go in. He's going to banger. He's going to foul. He's going to do some of those things. He does those things well. He's got to work on his moves and his athleticism from what I think. But his heart and his mind are in the right spot from everything that I've heard. And I think he's going to be able to accept a limited role behind some very talented fours and fives. And again, his benefit might not be in the box score. Yeah, Dominic, I think he did go to Winchester. I'd have to confirm that he did. So again, that's someone you want want that guy on your squad. If you're 9 or 10 on that squad, you want a guy that just loves the program. That'll do anything for the program. That'll always be there, always be on time. And then when you put them in because of a foul trouble or injury, they're going to give you everything that their athletic body can give. And I believe that's Peyton Sparks. I think that's a strength. I'm going to give you Ja'Kai Newton. I'll take Anthony Leal. Go ahead with Ja'Kai.
Newton, I think he's going to be an incredible force getting to the lane and just making stuff happen there. I think he's going to be a mad dog on defense. Don't know about his shooting yet. The biggest thing with Ja'Kai Newton, get well soon.
Yeah.
You know, we're hoping this kid just gets healthy and, you know, can, and whether he redshirts, whether they try to keep his year of eligibility and try to use him later in the season, whatever they all decide to do is, you know, will be in his best interest. But I think the big one for him, for him right now is there's just not much we know because we haven't seen the kid play at 100% in about 2 years.
Yeah. For Anthony Leal, I'd love to see him get some run. I think he's at the back end, but what a great teammate. And I think he's a great passer. When he did get some play so far at Indiana University, he was one of the better post feeders that you have. And I know he can shoot the basketball. So, you know, he's going to have to work on probably being able to guard in order to get on the floor. But, you know, he's a veteran. And he's a good teammate. I don't know that he'll have a whole lot of minutes this year. I think you're going to see the top nine play significant minutes. I think Peyton's going to be Sparks is going to be number 10, and then they'll take it easy with Ja'Kai because of his injury. So we got a couple more things to go through here before we get to segment three. Let's talk about Coach Woodson. Some things that he does well, some things that if we were on staff, we'd maybe make some suggestions and so forth. I thought Coach Woodson got better in year two at controlling the offense and controlling the flow of the game. He's so good after timeouts that I was always clamoring, like, if you're good at after timeouts, call stuff on the fly. Obviously, you want transition basketball first, but I thought he did that. I thought he did a much better job of substituting. And after I've reflected, Bob, I think he did a good job in using the roster that he had. And I love all of those guys, and we've been in the tournament 2 years in a row, but this roster is a lot more athletic and has a lot more potential. Their problem is going to be experience, where the team that just left had experience. And sometimes experience is better than talent. You know that as well. But those are some of the things I thought. And Coach Woodson off the floor has been fantastic. I think he's done a good job recruiting and needs to keep it up. But, you know, I had someone tell me this summer, like, those kids just eat up everything Coach Woodson tells them. They look to him as a father figure. When he pats them on the back, they're all – the soaking it in. When he kicks him in the butt, they're all soaking it in. So I think you've seen Coach Woodson grow to the college game. I mean, he's a heck of a coach in the NBA, mm-hmm. but college is different. I think he's adapted. I think he'll be even better in year three. The thing that I don't know what you can do or what you can't do, but defense got a little worse this year with a veteran team, with the same team coming back. Might have been because of X not putting the ball pressure. Hood Schifino was not the greatest at putting the ball pressure on there. Obviously, when you look from year to year, other teams, you know, you can cherry pick some of that. I would encourage him to make sure you get some good rebounding teams out there and get out and go. I will talk tempo here in just a second, but I think he's on the right trajectory of getting to that experience with the college game. I think the staff, his hires have been fantastic. I'm in a lot better place with Coach Woodson now mm-hmm. than I was in the hire 2 years ago.
Culture. You're just seeing a culture. You're seeing an identity, and it's something we haven't really seen in IU. I'd even go back probably since the early to mid 90s with the sense of purpose. It sounds small, and I'll probably, you know, hit on this again, or I've hit on this before, but watching them walk into a basketball game, watching the team come out on the floor and the staff walking in. Basically it's in a line, but everyone is, it's like they know their job, they know their purpose, they're there, they're all business. And then you watch little things like timeouts, you watch things like them exiting the floor. I don't think I've ever really seen him chew a guy out. Like, you know, you see sometimes coaches are just losing their mind on a kid going through the tunnel. I don't think I don't see that. It's more or less this thing of, and I don't even really think, you can tell me he's not happy, but you don't kind of see that same sort of almost overdone sort of frustration or what have you, or you just know that everybody kind of knows what they're supposed to be doing when they're supposed to be doing it. And it goes from, I would say, the guy that's, you know, that's heating up the burritos in the microwave all the way up through Woodson. You know, it's everybody in that program has got a sense of purpose. And that, to me, I think translates to on the floor, translates to off, you know, the practice, you know, the practice gym, the training table, the weights. I think he's building that culture, which is just so essential. I think if there's really anything I'm kind of looking at from a question standpoint is, okay, here you are, it's year three. You're no longer having to play through the post. You're no longer having to use your primary scorer, is no longer a guy who's a back who came to you, who when you got him was a back to the basket player, that you turned into a guy that was much more comfortable playing front to the basket. My big question now is, okay, can you quickly get a highly talented group to play together, knowing there's going to be hiccups, knowing there's going to be some dips in the roller coaster, knowing they're going to have some bad days? And can you get them to a point where by March, this is a team that's it's hitting on all cylinders and able to play at its highest possible level? You know, you can play yourself into a thing of saying, this team may just limp into the tournament or could be a Final Four contender. You look at this roster, you look at the situation, you can go up and down in any which way you can. But at this point, it's going to show, I think, for him, how effective is he, you know, in getting that message across early on with, really for the first time, his guys.
Yeah. You mentioned offense. I'm going to come right back to you. You know, there's been a lot of talk about there that the offense that he's wanted to play, he's got to get his guys in, and we're going to see this new kind of offense. I think that's the question, like, that we all have, and we don't have an answer until we actually see what they're trying to do. But you shared with me in prep of the show a few things, statistics offensively. I'm going to let you share them and lead off your thoughts. We're going to cover offense and defense, things we think are good, things we need have questions about, and we'll finish segment two then after we get done with defense. But go ahead, share some of those things offensively that you shared with me.
The question we have is, I use tempo good for them? You know, in Woodson's first seasons, and this is where, you know, statistics and KenPom can be, you know, when you start cherry picking, it can be a little problematic. I use 175th and 145th in tempo at around, you know, 67 to 68 possessions per game. That's over the course of those first two seasons. But in 21-22, the offense had an average possession length of 17.5 seconds, 176 on offense, 17.9 seconds on defense, 267th. Last year, it was 16.4 seconds on offense, which is 48th in the country, and then, or 48th in D1, and then 18.7 seconds, 355th on defense. In many respects, when you look at this team's tempo, they're playing more like Iowa than they are Purdue, Wisconsin, or even Michigan State. They're at the top end of the Big Ten in trying to push it. So you could say, well, they're not, you know, they're kind of an average team on tempo when you look at overall possessions, but they're getting a shot much faster than their opponents are getting a shot on the defensive end. And I think that that's telling us something about how Woodson wants to play, that he's trying to find ways of getting these guys to go north-south versus east-west. And he's trying to get his opponents to go east-west, and he's doing a pretty good job of getting them to do that. And unlike, I think, a Fran McCaffrey, who uses the ball press defense, uses different man schemes, other different zone schemes, and is probably willing to give up, I would say, 10% of his possessions for, he just kind of, you know, cost of doing business is this guy's going to get an open shot. This is going to happen when this guy takes it. I think Woodson is a lot less tolerant of that that cost of doing business bucket. I don't think he's ever going to see himself as being, we'll just outscore him. No, I think his thing is, I want to stop. I don't want to get beat in transition. I don't want to get beat on the boards. I want to make sure that, you know, we're doing and we're getting out and running because I want to push five guys. All five guys on the floor, I think he wants them to handle the ball in transition, be able to get the ball up the floor quickly, beat the defense down the court, and then if they have to, again, the best part about, you know, the best part about getting an NBA coach is he's had to run offense with six less seconds. So he sees that element of, we're going to get down there, XJ, get me into a ball screen situation quick, and we're in a out of our secondary break, we're into a quick hit movement. So we don't have to get realigned. So we don't have to get all set up and just, you know, get the defense get set as we get set to run a set to get them moving.
So do you see those numbers getting better offensively with this squad and being more of where Coach Woodson wants to go? I am a big believer in transition offense and transition defense. If you can win the transition offense game and win the transition defense game, you're going to win more games than you probably should just by talent alone. Because, Bob, I just think defenses and scouting and all the analytics and everything – if you let the defense get set, then they know what they want to do. If you can score in the first 10 to 15 seconds, whether it be your primary break or your quick-hitting secondary break, I just think that's better. It's more fun to play. It's more fun to watch. And it's something that I've wanted to see IU transition to for many years, and it seems like statistically it was headed that way, even with a roster that might not have been built to do that as efficiently as the rosters going forward. Your thoughts?
I think so. I mean, you know, because he's doing this with, you know, Race Thompson pushing the ball up the floor at times.
Miller Kopp, you know, on the break, right?
Miller Kopp, and again, Miller Kopp is Miller,
loved him.
Loved him. And I'll tell you, if you want a guy to shoot a three in transition, Miller Kopp might be your guy. But, you know, you Mac McBacco taking the ball down the floor. And, I mean, okay, so Zach Edey, who is Zach Edey going to beat down the floor on this IU team?
Well, and Bob, I forgot to say this.
I don't think they have a guy. I don't think they have a guy. No.
No. I was going to say this both about C.J. Gunn and both about Trey Galloway, and it slipped my mind. Getting ready this afternoon, I like their quick change of direction from defense to offense. We used to coach, Bob, first three steps are sprints. If you could beat your guy in the first three steps down the floor, you're going to get easy baskets. And I just keep thinking back. I haven't watched tape from last year, but I just think, how many times did Galloway get out? You see the pitch ahead to Galloway. Well, now you might have Galloway and Gunn on the game, or CJ Gunn. I think Caleb Banks can be that way, but that's a skill. Sometimes that, again, we see the ball go in the basket or we see a ball screen or whatever, but when do you adjust and push off and know that your team's got the rebound or got a steal and you can beat your guy in the first three steps? I think we got several guys who can do that maybe last year we couldn't just because of athleticism, but we got a couple of guys already have that skill. And that'll help with the tempo. That'll help with scoring early.
I think, and again, you're looking at a, you're looking at a situation where you have Gabe Cupps who's coming in as well. You know, you look at a kid like Cupps coming in and being able to, you know, just get down the floor. And then, so let's say that primary break doesn't work. You kick it back out to him and you're in, and you're into something. You're automatically into something.
We missed and Gabe Cupps in our roster.
I believe we did, didn't we?
Now that you mentioned that, that is just poor, poor hosting on my part. I jumped ahead to get to the sophomores, and then I went to the post players and totally forgot about Gabe Cupps. So you bring up Gabe Cupps. Talk about what he brings.
He's a, again, much like Newton. We think the kid. I'm pretty sure the kid's going to be a dog on defense. I think he's going to. I think he's going to make everybody crazy. When he's up, you know, and I think he can stay with just about any guard in the Big Ten, to be perfectly honest. I think he's going to be deceptively quick in that regard. I think the big question for him is, again, and I know I'm saying this a lot about a lot of guys, but I think with Cupps, it's going to be how quick point guards. We saw this with Braden Smith, who's, again, a talented kid in particular, you know, can play with just about anybody for a period of time, but not knowing when the door closes. When the defense moves over, because the window that was there for your entire life is now closed a lot faster. And a kid like Gabe Cupps may struggle with, but that was there. No, that was there 0.05 of a second ago, but you're not in high school anymore. That's a college player, and that window just closed on you. So now you got to know, man. I think he's going to be deceptively fun to watch, especially driving the ball in two-man game. I don't see it, you know, anybody saying, well, he's, you know, well, he reminds me of Jordan Holes. No, he doesn't. He just reminds me of Gabe Cupps. You know, he just looks like a kid that he's just going to do that.
He's a coach's kid. He has great vision. He is a facilitator by design. Like, he loves to facilitate. Mm-hmm. But you bring up a great point. You actually steal my thunder. I'm sitting here. So many times you say something like, oh, man, I got to come up with something now. Because you took exactly what I was going to say. You saw it with Hood Schifino sometimes early, especially the first half of the season. That window, he was – and everyone thought it might have been a little nonchalant passing. Well, that speed that he was passing at Mount Verd, a very good high school – that still got through. But in the college game, those passes aren't, and it looks like you're being a little lazy, but it's not. It's the speed of the game. So Gabe Cupps is going to come in. He's going to electrify. He's going to go down. He's going to score. He's going to shoot and make a shot. He's going to go behind the back and throw it to someone. But his assist-to-turnover ratio early to middle to late, hopefully you'll see that to where he understands that window. And so correct on that window. And then, you know, obviously the physicality of that. I am interested to see how, you know, how well he does guard. You get X and him coming in and hounding that guard. I can't believe I'm so excited about Gabe Cupps, and then I forget. Gabe, if you or your family are listening, man, that is my bad. I owe you, you know, a pizza or something from Pizza X. Free advertising. Now I'm really blowing it. So, but anyway, going back to offensive tempo, I am excited about where this is going. You're having more players that can be able to play multiple positions. You know, you're talking about a Ware who could pick and pop. We haven't had a pick and pop guy, you know, can renew, shoot, and be a pick and pop guy as well. I think, you know, the offense is evolving in year three under Coach Woodson. I would if there's something, I just would like to see him be a little more control. I want to clarify something. I need to do a better job as we get into the season. By sets, I don't mean flex offense or something that is point A to B to C to D and you got to follow it. I like movement to move the help, to put people in a decisive situation, to drive, to pass, to hit the open man. Spacing does happen, Bob, when you're standing. No doubt about it. You get great spacing when you're standing because you tell the offense where to stand. But you also give the defense the ability to pick and choose where they're going and what they're doing without being confused. When you move, lift shooters, dive, we call a 45 cut. When you do some of that. So that's the area where I would be saying to Coach Woodson, at some point you got to have some schemes, some calls that might not be plays or offenses, but they're just some actions to move the defense to put your players in a position to close, to drive a closeout, to utilize a ball screen and hit the lift guy a little bit easier by messing that help defense up. That would probably be my suggestion on offense for Coach
Wilson. The thing I would go to, and I'm all with the movement. I think there's a almost like a lack of aggressiveness in cutting as well. And I'm going to take a different view on the movement because I think, you know, you and I, we've talked before, we're both motion guys.
Right.
So when you're a motion guy, I mean, I guess we go to the meetings now and we pledge to embrace the ball screen, which we were never told was a good idea. I mean, when you're a recovering motion coach, in the world where it's just not, you know, you're not doing it, you know, you have to do it differently with five out constructs and everything else. You start wondering, okay, so what do we take and what do we give from it? And the whole idea of the back cut. And I was just talking to a coach, you know, recently, just talking about ruling their offense. Guys overplaying you, cut. You just cut to the basket. And teaching kids how to recognize that because they play too much 2K. That's the problem with kids today. They put too much 2K. 2K, nobody back cuts in 2K. There's no help defense in 2K. And then you put it on Yahoo mode, and you know, so, okay, so great. Steph just scored 250 points, and you're a cool kid now. But the point is, that doesn't translate to real basketball. You know, with Woodson, I'd love to see what Mike Woodson doing is encouraging that aggressiveness. And when they did it, it was beautiful. And you would watch some of the games and go, there's an open space right there. If Miller Kopp would just get off the drive line and attack it. And that's that movement you're talking about. Because I think so many times when we hear movement, we think motion, we think the back screen, we think, you know, cross screens, screen down, screen across, screen down, right, screen across. And you can hear like 16, 17 year old kids going, why would we want to play that? But because it's, you know, there has been some evolution in the game, much like we don't see the power eye in football anymore. We don't see a 3-2 alignment with three down screen across in basketball at many levels anymore. So I think the big key on this is we have, you know, we do need to see Mike Woodson on the offensive end really just kind of, you know, and maybe again, some of the assistants looking at it also, I'd like to be able to see more of that where when the defense is overplaying or kind of over scouting your set, attacking that a little differently.
I may steal that from you and use cutting more than movement, because if you cut and you cut with purpose, you're moving to help. And that coincides with the newer game. And I also will now put on my resume, I'm a recovering motion coach. I also like that, but I spent 6 hours with Brad Brunell, who's at Clemson. Mm-hmm. He was at Wright State. When he was at Wright State, I had the ability to go talk to him, and he's an old motion guy. And this was, mm-hmm, this was 12 years ago. And he said, I don't teach motion anymore. I teach them to move. Just cut, mm-hmm, cut hard and go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the problem with moving too much is you mess that spacing up. If you screen, you mess up spacing. Mm-hmm. So, there's purposeful screening, but not all out screening. If you go back and watch old tapes of IU, that lane is congested in the inside out screening of Bob Knight. That can't work in today's, but you can set a chin screen. If you are in the community, go back and watch that 45 cut on that pick and pop, the Furman pick and pop with the 45 cut is exactly what you're talking about there. The defense turned and watched the pick and pop guy, and that guy just cut from the wing to the basket. Mm-hmm. That's not a call. That's not anything, but that is a designed movement cutting on offense. Let's finish here with defense. For me, we sometimes stay and help in that nail slot rim a little too much and give up that wing slot three. The other thing is I really like that we've had rim protection, but you got to crack down rebound. The concern for me is we did not rebound. Again, I'm so sorry to everyone how many times I've said rebound, mm-hmm, rebound, rebound. But when you have size and athleticism, you might be able to go get that. When Ware goes to block a shot and the shot gets off, then you might have guys that can go snag that rebound a little bit more this year. Last year we didn't do that. We gave up some offensive rebounding. But I do like the rim protection. I do like the overall defensive scheme. And I think the longer length and athleticism will make that defense a lot better once they get it cohesive. Like, you can have all the athletes in the world, but if they don't play on a string, Bob, then there's going to be holes where the other athletes on the other side are going to expose that defense. That's my concern, is how quickly they can play as a team. Individually, I'm not so concerned. but rebounding. So those are my thoughts on defense.
The play isn't over till you have the ball. And your ideal outcome is that you don't have it taking it out from the baseline, being it, you know, with after they scored it. You don't it's not done till you got it. And I think at times, you know, again, you're dealing with highly talented, very, very talented kids. What they miss sometimes in the game is, it's hard for them to imagine playing that sort of the talent level equal or better at them in some areas night in, night out. And that's where that, again, the not just blocking out, but just being aware of where they need to be in the scheme position. Shot goes up, you're looking to get to your spot, not, you know, basically getting on a body and being able to compete for rebounds. They got better at it in January and February, but I mean, there were some times I was showing pictures of, you know, five guys with their backs to their man watching a basketball. That's the sort of thing we need to, you know, successful programs don't have those problems in January. So the highly successful programs don't have those problems in January. So let's see how quick they can get these guys up to speed. And I think that from the defensive standpoint, it's just getting the right type of competitive mindset early on.
So there you have it, a real quick roster breakdown. Forgot Gabe Cutts, but went back and got him.
We got him.
You know, thoughts from a couple guys in Indiana that don't watch practice, but hopefully we know a little bit and can give you a little bit of not the obvious things, of some things to watch when you see the scrimmages, when you see some practice. You won't see it in any highlight clips because the ball goes in 99% of the time in the highlight clips. But hopefully, again, you know, Bob and I talking some basketball. If you have any questions, get a hold of us. Let us know. We like to share our thoughts with you. So coming up on Assembly Hall Radio, it's mailbag time. We got some great questions, and we're going to answer them next. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call. That's good stuff, man.
Love it. Love it.
My wife always says, I couldn't do that because how do you answer stuff on the fly? I'm like, well, when you have a guy like Bob on and he steals all my thoughts that I had prepared,
it
makes me feel good that other people are seeing the same thing and I'm not just some old man get off my lawn. You know,
screen, it's
that was good. I hope it was good. I hope people enjoyed it, but I sure did.
I did too. And I always said, you know, you and I could sit back, you know, with whatever beverage of our choice, you know, sit on a deck for 3 hours and just talk about this stuff and probably finish each other's sentences.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think one thing about basketball is that when you do it long enough, some things you everyone picks up on this, you know, you pick up on it and you know what to look for. And I think that that's the biggest problem. I think sometimes that when you look at it from the beginning is, well, did the ball go in? How many good coaches we've been around don't even know, wait, who hit the shot?
Yeah.
You know, when you're watching a team play, it's like sometimes like, who hit that? Because you're watching something on the backside. You're watching something away from the play. And that's why I love talking ball with you, man, because it's just, you challenge me because I'm like, ooh, wait, he took that one. So the ones you're starting on, I'm doing the same thing on this end, man. So don't worry about it. It's part of it.
Yeah, no, I think the roster is better. Mm-hmm. I think it's less experienced, and that worries me. To be honest with you, talent without experience, that can be a scary thing to navigate. Right. The best thing is to be talented and experienced. But I do like I think the roster has better size, length, and potentially skill, and that does not demean any of the guys who left the program.
The one saving grace is actually at 6 years. I go back to that I think that, you know, if we were going into this with a freshman point guard, I'd probably be a little more nervous.
Right.
I have a feeling that in a 70 possession game, those last seven possessions, that if XJ can if they can get this team to play in a way where XJ owns the last seven offensive possessions, it's going to look really good. Like if he gets, if for 63 possessions, he gets everybody else involved And he's kind of like, well, yeah, I got a shot here, a shot there, got a drive here, drive there. And then all of a sudden, those last seven possessions, he can take a game over. That, to me, will be the interesting thing, because I think at that point, then this thing's clicking.
And take a game over by scoring, by passing,
maybe,
by defending,
whatever it is.
Being that Coach Woodson on the floor is going to be his best asset. I do worry about XJ wanting to prove everyone. He sat out for a long time. The rust is not necessarily, yeah, he'll be a little rusty, but he has shown at times to be hyper, I don't want to say hyperactive, but hyper intense. And he just needs to play his game at his regular speed and read the floor and make the pass when it's needed, score when it's needed. If he can bottle that last third of that first year, I don't think we saw it before he got injured. I thought he was up and down even at the beginning of last year. And so, yes, I do agree that it gives you a little bit of comfort knowing that someone's been there, really wants to prove himself as opposed to a freshman guard. That's better than having a freshman guard. But XJ still has some things to prove with his cerebral approach to the basketball game, in my opinion. And I believe he will. I believe he will. You don't stick around for 6 years and go through all that training and stuff to not try to do that, at least. I think his mind is in the right spot. He's just got to make some good decisions, but we'll see. All right, let's get to these questions, and we'll call it a night and let you go. Here we go.
This is Tim Priller, and I never miss an episode of the Assembly Call.
Welcome back to Assembly Call Radio. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni. I'm here with Bob Motes. So we just got this done discussing offense, defense, Coach Woodson, the whole entire roster, including Gabe Cups, a little late. And now we're going to go to your questions. It's time for our mailbag section. Most of these questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. Our first question of the evening is from J.D. DeFries. And JD asks, as coaches with experience at varying levels of basketball, what factors do you look to when you evaluate other coaches, specifically college coaches, as a fan of the game? Bob, go ahead.
It's a great question. I think for me a lot, it really kind of starts watching it. When you're watching another team play, it's are you doing what you think they should be doing? When you look at a team on paper, when you look at kind of where, how a team is built, are they in control of the game? Or are they not in control of the game? And a lot of that comes down to preparation. How well prepared is a team coming out? And, you know, are they able to get, you know, are they able to force a team to use their fourth or fifth options? Like a great example of me watching what I consider coaching malpractice was Bob Huggins last year playing Purdue. The greatest like pressure coach of the 21st century, I think, was, you know, the late 20th or 21st century, Bob Huggins with the half-court trap defenses, whoever, you know, whether it was Cincinnati or West Virginia, this guy put pressure on everybody. Purdue shows up, no denial. I mean, they let Purdue just run practice sets for 70 possessions. And I'm looking at that going, why is this not, you know, what's going on here? So I'm looking at, you know, how you have to stop Purdue. You can't let Zach Edey just run, you know, just run the whole situation. So when you kind of look at a situation like, you know, when you're watching a game and I'm watching a thing, I'm like, you're not really disrupting the other team. So how did your game plan not work in? Was it the fact that you didn't prepare for them the way that maybe you didn't prepare a certain way for them? Maybe the other backtrack to that is, Maybe the guys just didn't execute it the way that you needed them to execute it, or maybe you were just wrong in your scout and your assessment. I also look a lot of times, you know, it's like one of the best things I've noticed is, and it's actually changed some of the things I did, because I was one of those coaches in timeouts. Man, I was trying to cram too much information in, and I always found myself like when I started watching the timeouts in the college game, and just how, wait, that's what they're saying? Oh man, I've been a head coach for 20 plus years. I mean, okay, I can pare this down. What do I really want to say in 30 or 60 seconds? What do I really want, the point I really want to get across? And so when you kind of start thinking about, you know, you look at looking at how programs, how quick are they getting back to something, to executing the simple things, doing the small things right. And, you know, everything from how guys are landing, you know, again, we were talking about going off 2 feet, you know, hitting jump stops, how they're catching a basketball, all those little things that you're kind of watching, those attention to detail things that, you know, can be the edge of the difference as to one team being better than another team. And seeing, and a lot of that is coaching, and a lot of it's done on the practice court in the film room.
I think as a fan, I listen to a lot of coaches in their post game, and when I cover for Assembly Call and the Delphi Bracketology, being able to go to games, I think you can tell, for at least for me, being a basketball coach, you can tell who's giving you the answer to get rid of the interview versus a guy who's really wanting to get rid of the interview still, but still talks game. If you've been to clinics, you know, coaching clinics, you just saw, you meet some coaches and you see them in an element with other coaches. That helps a little bit. I will always agree with you on watching the details. You know, Jay Wright with the jump stops at Villanova, just fundamental basketball. And you can tell, I'm forgetting the guy who's out at UCLA right now. He's got my hairstyle.
I know. I'm
forgetting that real quick.
Mick Cronin. It's Cronin. Mick
Cronin. I have friends over in the Cincinnati area head coach, and they went to watch his practice. You know, it doesn't always mean you're right. Like, I had heard great things about Archie, and I liked the way Archie talked basketball, but he didn't have a way to relate, right? So sometimes your opinion changes, but when you're watching TV, I totally agree with you. Anytime on FS1 or whatever, they're having the mic'd up coaches, I would suggest fans watching. Even if it's a game you don't want to watch, you will learn so much. There was a game, Ed Cooley, Providence against Mike Anderson, St. John's. And I think it was Ed Cooley, and Ed Cooley just coached circles around Mike Anderson. It'd be, you know, what was going on in one timeout versus what was going on in the other timeout. And I'm just sitting there going, man, this guy is where I'd want my kid to play versus this guy. And I'm very pro coach. So I don't like to criticize coaches like Mike Anderson or whatever, but it was very, you know, obvious in there who was getting the communication done to their team at a more efficient way than the other. So I like to hear these guys talk. I like to see what they run. You see sometimes, I'm not sold on Hubert Davis down at North Carolina. They have a lot of talent, and when it's hot, it's good. You can tell sometimes, I think, when you've been in the game for 20 years, you can tell guys who are riding the talent boat versus guys who are really affecting the game. And coaches probably affect, what, 2 to 4 games a year? Actual during the game change that. I mean, obviously during practice and their strategy and game planning, they probably affect that more. But you take a program that's going to win 20 games and put a good coach in there, they're going to go 24 or 25. You take a program that's talented enough to win 20 and you have a bad coach, they're down to 14 or 15. I think that's kind of the variance. But I look at fundamentals, what they're running offense and defense after timeouts, I think are huge ways to talk about how good coaches can influence the game. I think that's where Coach Woodson is really excellent at his ATOs. I think those things are things that I look for in the coaches.
Real quick on Hubert, if you guys want to watch an example of what Coach is talking about, watch the last 30 seconds of the national championship game. Because I was actually thinking about this question earlier today, and watch what happened when he came out of a timeout on the sideline out of bounds play. And just watch it and just, you know, decide for yourself, because I had the same questions on Hubert. And I'm not saying, you know, you can develop into this. I think one problem coaches have is, you know, if you've been an assistant coach for 25 years and all of a sudden you're a head coach, it's a different ball game. So I think for them, it's a little different when you're sitting in the captain's chair.
Mediocre Jay sent in a question. What are some lineups you're interested in seeing this coming season, and what are some offensive actions or sets you'd like to see those lineups run? We kind of covered that a little bit in the offense. I like that chin action, which is a guard-to-guard screen at the top with a back screen by your five. It gets the guy under the basket. Again, in the community, we showed a little bit of that in the last Coach's Corner. I'm going to steal Bob's words. I want more cutting than actual plays or set continuity offenses, teaching the kids to cut and move and lift as opposed to just standing in the dribble drive ball screen type world that we're in. I like small lineups. I'm interested to see Mbako, Banks, Gunn, and XJ or Cups at the four, and then throw in, you know, Renew or Ware at the five. And not as a starting lineup, not as the best lineup, just as a lineup that's out there at some point playing for a segment of 5 or 6 minutes. I think you got some athletes with Xavier and CJ Banks at the three and Mbako at the four, and you put Ware at the five or you put Renew at the five. I mean, those are some athletes now. And you could, you know, interchange, you know, Cups and Newton when he gets healthy. Again, the athletic diversity of this team is going to be fun if it can overcome the newness and the inexperience of meshing together. They have an opportunity to do some things. Your thoughts on some lineups or sets, actions that you'd like to see, Bob?
Interested in seeing what happens when XJ is not on the court, how everything flows. You know, I'm interested to see, you know, who does Trey, you know, do you keep Trey out there with a CJ Gunn? Do you let Gabe go out there with Trey, or do you let Gabe go out there with CJ? Not really sure how that plays in. I think that lineup combination is huge. I'm with Coach with small lineups. I like small lineups. You know, the post to me is, you know, it's like you really want movement from your bigs. You want high low movement. You like, you know, weak side post when dunker spot, because then you're putting their man in a help dilemma. Whatever you can do those things. I'm going to say, Jay, if there's one concept that's hitting me upside the head right now that I've just been like obsessed with and trying to figure out how to do it, how to do something with it. Motion strong, motion weak constructs out of San Antonio or Davidson from 10, 15 years ago. YouTube it, Google it, look at it. The whole kind of idea of what they do with a fast, rapid initiation of the offense, and then what they do to get the ball moving. You watch San Antonio from 10 years ago, and the ball never hits the floor until they're, you know, the ball never, you know, there's some possessions the ball never hits the floor, or some possessions where they go right into two-man game. There's so much you can do out of those concepts. I'll be interested to see if IU tries any of that this year.
Very good stuff. IU grad Mark says, any idea the longest time between signing, quote, normal high school recruits has been for IU? Looking at people scheduling officials for this fall would mean we haven't signed a kid we are recruiting out of high school for nearly 2 years. I think Newton was the last one. Just seems abnormally long, even in the age of speed dating to me. I think Mbako was a high school signee, correct, technically?
He is, yeah. I think I know where Mark's going with this, I can't think of a time. I know this much. I look back. Cody Zeller didn't sign until November of his senior year of high school, and that was after they had a two person class with Sheehy and Oladipo. I think a lot of it's just a matter of I get where we're going with this, because it's been a long time since we've seen a long term investment pay off. Like, we're doing great on the scratch offs. We're just not doing really good on the five number tickets. I think the key to watch is where do these guys end up. And I think that, you know, I think I've said it, you know, before in a community conversation we were having on recruiting momentum. I think Thanksgiving is our drop dead. Like, when you look at Thanksgiving, and if you see like 90% of IU's targets have gone elsewhere, then it's like, you know, I think Mike Weemuth and I'll be looking at you going, well, this didn't go as we were hoping. And that's when you're not worried, but you're thinking a little bit more about it.
Yeah. I think too, part of the reason is you're in year three, you know, and to develop those long-term relationships where someone's going to sign in the spring or sign in the summer, you know, takes a little time in relationships, and really you have Newton and you had Hood Schifino as only the two what you could call traditional recruitments that weren't, you know, Mbako went to Duke first and Bates went to Texas first, Bates, so Texas. We've been really good at that. And then we grabbed Renew was at Florida first, so we've been good at those short-term things. But I think it takes time to build relationships and the continuity of the staff. And, again, I think that's probably where Coach Woodson has come in from the pro game to the college game and kind of maybe was a little slow to the speed of what needs to be done and what his efforts were to be. But I think now he's totally understanding of where we need to be. The next two classes will tell. Traditionally, though, it was November signing for most classes, though, right, Bob? Even back in, yeah. in our day, everyone waited. They may have committed. Well, the commitment could come at any time. Signing is always in November. The technical signing is in November, but the commitment is probably what IU grad's talking about.
I'm going to put it this way: you're an 18-year-old kid, and your phone's blowing up. And your question is: if you're Trent Sisley, are you hoping it's Kenya Hunter saying hi, how you doing, or the cute girl in the algebra class? You know, one thing that's hard to do when you start thinking about recruiting: there's 16, 17, 18-year-old boys. They've got a, you know, they're picking a college. They're trying to pick a program that works for them. They may not, you know, they're not even in decision mode yet. And they've got a lot, you know, and at this point, you know, it's like, I think a lot of this is, there's a process to this. And think about when you picked your college, when you finally said, it's time for me to go someplace. I think coach was a lot like me. The minute the acceptance letter from IU came said, when do I get to go?
Yeah.
But when you're a Division I college basketball player, especially in the top 50, in the most elite sport we can think of, that's a hard, they're going to take their time on it and still, you know, still do the things that teenagers do.
And our final question is from Jim Tom Hoosier. He says, which player do you think will have a breakout season? Can't pick Geronimo.
I'm going to say CJ Gunn. I think that's I think he's going to be the one that you're going to see like, wow, who, you know, compared last year, his first year to his second year, it's going to be a huge difference.
I cannot argue with that, but I'm going to go with a little bit maybe of a surprise is Malik Renew. I think sometimes it's like, you know, everyone likes the backup quarterback. Everyone likes the transfers in, right? And they like those types of guys, and they forget about the fact that Malik Renew is a really outstanding basketball player. And I think he's going to grow into a role that maybe a lot of people think he'll have a similar role as a freshman, but I think he might grow into a lead role. So I'm going to pick Malik Renew for breakout player this year. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for this live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music. Thanks to John Ringer for rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. Until then.
Take it from me, Yogi Ferrell. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
That's it. We're done. No more questions.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Hey, the show's over. Here I come, Coach Tonsoni.
All right, that'll do it. Bob, thanks for joining us. Really good to talk hoops with you.
Anytime, Coach. It's always a great use of my 90 minutes, and it also means my dog doesn't get to hear it as much. So, you know,
always good. It's just I've been cautiously excited the last 3 years, but you know, just the talent level is better. I think we saw it. We talked about that. The tempo is getting better. The rebounding potential is getting better. We just have to see it actually come together. And sometimes that's difficult. And that doesn't mean the players aren't trying. The coaches aren't trying too. It's not just because they're talented, they're going to play well. We hope so though.
That's my thing. And I mean, I'm fully expecting these games. Sometimes they're going to look like a potential national championship. And then 4 days later, they're going to look like this is a team that should lose in the first round of the NIT if they make it. You know, it's like, I'm kind of preparing myself for that sort of up and down season. I think in the aggregate, we're going to feel better about this team than we did the last two. I'm thinking that's our best case scenario is that don't talk about where we are in December. Look at where we are in March. I think I'm going to say all year this is a tournament team. They just have to find themselves in it. But it's so the best thing. You know, again, we all know the best thing about freshmen, they become sophomores. The best thing about sophomores, become juniors. You know, that age, that experience, that youthfulness. It can be very frustrating to coach through, and we really haven't seen Mike Woodson have to deal with that yet. Yeah. He's had pretty more or less he's had veteran squads, so it's gonna be interesting to see and I'm sure he can do it. I'm sure he's going to show us that he can do it, but I think it's something that we're gonna be watching moving forward.
Where you feel comfortable with Coach Woodson is in the NBA. You got player turnover every year. But in the NBA, you don't generally play your rookies either. You play veterans or you sign a veteran who has had some experience, which you can rely on, right? So there is a little bit of a learning curve for all of us coaches when you have, you know, at the high school level, when you replace, you know, three seniors and your leading scorer with a good sophomore, you understand that there are going to be nights when that sophomore plays really well and then that there are going to be nights where that sophomore doesn't play well. And you have to coach that youthful team a lot different than you had to do with that veteran team. And so that's something that, you trust Coach Woodson to be ready for. But, again, it's different than the pros. And so all of these things are out there. But the roster, to me, that we went through tonight – is better and has a good chunk of potential to be reached that we haven't seen for a while. And regardless of where Indiana, I think the recruiting is leading to the program being where it can compete at a higher level on a national stage going forward. It's in that direction.
We look a lot more like Alabama, Auburn, Texas than we do Purdue, Wisconsin, and even, give me another one out of the Big Ten, Minnesota. You know, we look like a team that's a national team. We look like a team that's, you know, when you start talking about Elite Eights and Sweet 16s, those are the teams that are there and the ones that really kind of show those things. And so, I mean, And again, man, anymore, we're watching these tournaments, and you're the bracketologist, and you tell me, but it's like that 8 seed, that 9 seed. It's I don't know if it's it doesn't feel like it's more frequent, but we've had 2 16 upsets in the last 4 years. We're seeing there's a leveling of the game, and by the time you get to March, the seedings definitely still matter, but this year, I mean, the best seed in the tournament, the best seed in the Final Four was a 4 seed.
Yeah,
and it wasn't because the bracketologist got it wrong. It wasn't because it's just because teams are that good.
You know, all year long, you want to be ranked in the top 25, right? You feel pretty good about your program if you break the top 25, and it's on your Twitter bio and your Instagram page. We're 19th. Well, if you're 19th in the country, you're a 5 seed.
You're a 5 seed. Yeah,
and I'll tell you, 19 can beat a 1, 2, or 3 ranked team at any time, and that's the thing that opened my eyes with the bracketologies all those years ago when I started was that if you're a 7 seed, you're in the top 28 of the whole country. So 7 plays a 2 in the first weekend. If the 7 wins their first game, the 2 play, that's a 7-2 matchup to get to the Sweet 16. That's not guaranteed. That's why. You know, getting to that Sweet 16 is special. And even if you look at your top 10 seed, go 1 through 10, that's your top 40 teams in all of Division I.
Yeah.
Obviously, teams in the 30s are not as good as your top 10 teams, but they're capable athletes of on a one-and-done situation of winning a basketball game. That's why, I don't put a Final Four or a national championship as – the only way a season can be successful, because you can have a successful season, just run into a roadblock. We know that all too well with 2013 team. You want to be able to be a consistent winner and a consistent participant in that second weekend or the Final Four if you can get there. But you got to start somewhere, and I'm pretty pleased with where Indiana is at this time.
I talk a lot about being the top 2% of college basketball.
Yep.
then that's that 1 through 8 seed, that or the ones in the 2 seeds. That's where we want to be. You know, that's where we want to be more times than not. And knowing that you're never going to stay there forever, you know, you fluctuate a bit.
Yep. All righty, my friend, that'll do it. I'm going to get this off to Ari so he can publish it. I thank you.
All right.
Good luck getting back to school and doing all those fun things. And before you know it, we'll see those balls bouncing on that hardwood.
It's coming.
I'm trying to decide if I'm going to New York or not. If I have some time to take and go see the Hoosiers play in New York, that's my big decision in the fall.
Man, you only live once. If you got a chance to do it, do it.
I know.
Especially that time of year. Take the wife to Rockefeller Center. She'd love it.
It'd be awesome. So, all right, my friend.
All right.
We will see you soon. Be safe. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Have a good weekend.